This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Let's move over to another case that's going on right now.
Pages of all my notes.
The Corey Richens case. We are now entering week number two. The jury has heard two completely different realities. The prosecution says Corey systematically positioned insurance policies, sourced fentanyl through her housekeeper, and poisoned her husband for money. The defense says the key witness is an active drug user who changed her story after getting immunity. The supplier now contradicts her, and the physical evidence simply doesn't exist. Robin Drake with us, as he is now every day. I have to get used to this. Like, you're always here. Robin Drake.
I know.
Yeah, Robin Drake is here. He's always there.
Ooh, I got to tell you, it really does.
Yeah.
Having a day job again kind of is overwhelming.
Yeah. Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, retired FBI special agent. This is a fascinating case because I feel like it's there's two lanes here that can simultaneously be true. Corey Richens could have very likely and easily killed her husband, and a lot of the evidence, I would say a mountain of it, points to that circumstantially just through her own words. But you can also have a very bad investigation at the same time that misses so many obvious things. But just because they miss so many obvious things doesn't discount these pieces over here. But it certainly helps if you're the defense attorney for Corey Richens, so you can point or you can poke holes in all this. Let's start out with Carmen Lauber, the prosecution's one of the prosecution's star witness. She was using meth during the time of the period in question. She got immunity from three jurisdictions. Her own supplier now says he sold her oxy, not fentanyl. She admitted confusion on the stand. When a witness has that many credibility wounds, Robin, what kind of behavioral signals does that give off to the core of their testimony as being reliable when, you know, they're on drugs, they're contradicting their story left and right? I don't know. I mean, this is an interesting one because the big contradiction at play here is the type of drug that Eric consumed and died. But at the end of the day, are we just playing semantics with a label? Because at the end of the day, Corey wanted something stronger and she got something stronger. And that chain is not really denied as having taken place. It's more so what they called what they got as being in question.
You know, the number of times we've covered cases where the chaos of drug addicts and alcoholics plays out. It's like, all right, of course, there's not going to be a good memory because they are what they are. I watched a lot of her testimony on Carmen's ends. I do have a soft spot for people in recovery because they typically are more forthcoming because they've owned their behavior. And unlike Nick Reiner, Carmen has the appearance and the demeanor and the presentation of doing just that. So I give grace to not remembering exact details because she's drug induced as well as the person countering her claims. So I think a jury, if I was on the jury, if I hear this, I'm like, all right, I'm kind of, all right, it's all over the place. Was Corey going for something that could potentially, you know, that she wanted to give her husband? Yes. What the semantics of actually what it was whatever. Because when you put that, because remember her testimony, she is the key witness for the prosecution. A lot of it would not have been here without her coming forward. At the same time, though, once that knowledge just comes forward, it's like the cart of house just tumbles, because when you start looking at the whole insurance fraud side of things, because remember there's two prosecutions going on here, and the second one hasn't started yet. The first one is for murder. The second one is for this massive financial fraud that she's committed, and the whole background of financial fraud comes about in order. You know, the whole reason for this one was that would be successful, you got to kill the husband first. So you can't have one without the other. What kind of drugs she bought, when, how? I think the jury, with the way they're taking notes, the way they're presenting, the way they're paying attention to her, it wasn't a great day for prosecution, but I don't think it was one that's going to kind of shift anything on them.
I don't know. It's a great day for either, honestly. I mean, the thing is, nobody knew what it was. I mean, one's calling it Oxycontin, one's calling it oxycodone. One of them is saying there's fentanyl, and then Corey's asking for propofol, literally. The Michael Jackson shit is what she said. She doesn't even know what she's asking for. So it's not like she went to the house. This is what kind of gets me. I mean, I get what the defense attorney is doing. They're just trying to basically create something out of nothing to create confusion here with the jury. See, they didn't even know what they were ordering. Yeah.
I don't know.
A bunch of drug addicts, too. I mean, the drug addicts also didn't know what they were delivering either.
They just want to get high.
Exactly.
So they want shit that's going to kill someone. I mean, literally. I mean,
when you're asking for the Michael Jackson shit, that has one meaning to it.
Right. I want something that's going to kill someone.
Yeah.
And make it look like I didn't try to do it. I mean, it's literally, to try to paint him as a drug addict that was addicted to painkillers and that he accidentally overdosed. Again, I looked at this too. Does it fit his behavior arc in life? And was anyone else aware of it? No, it does not fit Eric's behavior arc. Now, could he have this super secret side of himself that he hid because he's an addict? Yeah, that happens all the time. But it doesn't quite fit when you look at the totality of all the other data points and massive red flags that are out there. All the red flags align with Corey did try to get the shit that's going to kill him, not him doing it accidentally overdosing.
And it wasn't a story of, she was scoring stuff off the street because he has pain and he can't get stuff from his doctor anymore. So this is what they're resorting to. It wasn't even that. It was the Michael Jackson shit. That's not this is going to help with his knee or we want him to sleep better at night. The Michael Jackson shit means it's going to kill you. And obviously propofol is not what they were going to use, but that's what she requested. So she requested stronger stuff. She got stronger stuff. It could have been anything. I mean, at this point, does it really matter if it was like chloroform or...
You think she even knew?
No. I mean, I don't think she knew. It was like, here's the Michael Jackson shit, Corey, whatever you want to call it. Enjoy.
Here's what my housekeeper gave me.
Well, and the fact that it was, the things that were on the street too at the time, this stuff, I mean... We're in an epidemic of people dying from fentanyl overdoses because it's getting into other drugs. People are thinking they're getting oxy. People are thinking they're getting something else. And surprise, the street shit that was, whipped up in some, underground lab somewhere, not very scientifically, the portions can be off a bit. Yes. And that's how you could easily get something strong. So I don't have a doubt for a second that maybe, the Crozer originally did think he was, tell her it's fentanyl. Tell her whatever the fuck she wants to think it is. And it is something stronger than what she got.
Right. Just give me my money. Seriously. So when you're a dealer, are you really giving a rat's ass? You'll pass anything you can get your hands on to. So he's saying it's one thing, the guy that gave it to Carmen, he's saying it was this or this. How does he actually know? Did he make it? I mean,
he doesn't.
These people are all drug addicts and nuts. They're just going for money. They're going for high. So
I wasn't selling fentanyl. Yeah. Cause it wasn't on the street yet. Well, maybe you didn't realize it was, you didn't realize it was in your drugs.
Right. When he went to the drugstore, it was a prescription to pick it up. It said this, no, that's not how he got it.
No. And it's also because some of the testimony he said also didn't make a whole lot of sense. Cause he had referenced that the prescriptions he was getting them from, cause he was referencing, he was buying them from people who were getting legal prescriptions and then filtering that out. These were not prescription medications. Right. They tested them. These were street drugs. These were not ones that you're getting at Walgreens. So there's that.
Morons helping morons make stupid things happen.
Very much so.
and again, this goes to the stupidity of any time we've seen this so many times. Anytime you involve at least one other person in the stupid shit you're going to do, it always goes sideways. And here's the thing about this. So I looked at the background of Carmen and Corey, how they became friends. And so they're friends for kind of acquaintances before that they only became friends because she was a housekeeper for them. They came through a service that she hired. And so through the course of her coming in every other week to take care of the house, they became friends. And so you're asking, I mean, just think of the insanity of this, at least what the prosecution is saying. So here's someone you hired for a service to clean your house every other week. The service goes out of business and you keep Carmen on board because you like her. And she's got a drug addiction problem, but you like her enough to confide in her that you want to kill your husband and drug him to death. And that what kind of moron? Well, the kind of moron to kill someone is what the kind of moron that does this. And that's why I never give any kind of credit to anyone being smart. That think about this. If you had any brain and intelligence that you could actually channel into providing for yourself, you wouldn't have to take out life insurance policies and bump someone off because you're not making enough money. How about don't spend the money in the first place, you idiot?
Then there's that.
Moron. It's interesting. I mean, the modality of Corey. I mean, after Eric died, Corey, she wrote the children's grief book, Are You Still With Me? And then went on the promotional tour, podcast interviews, public appearances, while under investigation. I mean, most people that are facing potential murder charges, you try to minimize your exposure. She's out there. I mean, look, she could have shut up. She got away with it for a long time. They didn't arrest her for like a year. If you got away with this, nobody's asking questions. But she had the audacity, again, assuming she did this, innocent until proven guilty, alleged, blah, 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 blah. She had the audacity to go and do a book tour. About like and bring more attention back to her. It's just like you just can't resist, can you, little Miss Narcissist? It's like it's too tempting to go and grab that carrot, even though you like the odds of it pulling the whole tree down are very high if you're grabbing that stick that carrot's hanging off of. Yeah. But she did.
She doubled down on stupid, didn't she? You know, the look at me moments that people have, that people love sympathy themes in life because, you know, when people show gratitude and compassion towards you, it really fuels our big four in our brain, the dopamine, the oxytocin, the serotonin, the endorphins, because people are saying, oh, woe is Corey. And now, granted, I thought about this earlier today. I'll give her... I shouldn't do it, but I'll give her a little grace in the fact that because I don't know her, I don't live inside her head. Maybe there was a part because she's got four kids. Maybe there was a part that she was doing some semblance of this for her kids, not because of her, you know? So it's hard not to want to kind of see it from her point of view after she killed her husband.
I mean, because assuming she's really good at compartmentalizing this,
right.
you could have two lanes where she is looking at her kids going, oh, they really are looking hurt. And I want them to not look so hurt. Because I want to feel better about myself. So what can I do to make that happen?
That's definitely the way I could see that playing. I was like, people saying to themselves, how could she possibly friggin' do that? So your husband's out of the picture, and now you're left with the wreckage of your single mom of four kids, and they're hurting, they're in pain, and you want to do something to ease that pain. And so, you know, maybe the idea was either given to her or popped in her head to do this, and then that stupid narcissistic brain of hers says, ooh, I can take care of them, but I can really take care of me even more because it'll be a bigger look at me moment. Because when you grow up in life without accountability or guardrails, we've seen this all the time, this is the kind of shit that comes about. And so no accountability, no guardrails. And the big reason that pops up on this one is she loves to control the narrative. And What better way to control the narrative than to write the narrative and put it in a children's book?
Well, it's very par for the course, and we can't diagnose her. If I were to take a wild guess, I'd be going down borderline territory or narcissistic personality disorder. And if we were to operate from those patterns of behavior, those folks love to knock the blocks down and then build the tower back up. And look at this tower they built. Oh my gosh. And hopefully everybody forgets that they're the ones that took their leg and kicked it over in the first place. Mm-hmm. That's par for the course. I mean, this is exactly that.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to destroy this and I'm going to be the hero because I'm going to fix everything too.
It's just it. There's no end of surprises of the stupid things people like this will do. You know, what struck me when we were talking about this a second ago was, you know, in all my years when I was in the FBI, the thing that people always said to me was, because you had two sides of the FBI. You had the side that worked on national security issues like I did, which is terrorism and spy recruitments. And then you had the side that was the criminal guys, and the criminal guys did stuff like this. And the running commentary I always heard was, you know, the guys that were criminal matters played with people that played checkers. And then the guys that did what I did, we played chess, because the guys I went against to try to that were committing espionage and spies and all that, you know, you're dealing with human beings with extremely intelligent, extremely emotional, intelligent, highly functional individuals that I was doing the same kind of things of predicting behavior on. And then I came to this side of the world and I'm like, oh my God, these people are easy as shit. Now I understand why. These people are idiots. They're complete idiots.
Yeah.
So not in not one case have we ever covered would I ever say that any of the suspects, whether they're guilty or innocent, but they're just in this chaotic world, would any of them ever reached a level that they could have ever been in the side of the world to work in national security? Not even close. Their emotional intelligence and IQ is so low by comparison. It's ridiculous. So that's why working, my wife asked me this over the weekend, you know, if you had to do any part of your career over, what would have been? I said, instead of probably my last bunch of years, I would have probably loved to shift to this or even stayed longer to do this even more, because this is these people are just fascinating and easy to understand. It really is. I mean, just because that you hit these themes, arcs of crazy, they all fall within it. And that's what we do all the time.
And I think the reality, I think when you first see a case, if you're not familiar with true crime, a lot of people go into these cases and look at Corey, look at Alec Murdaugh, look at whoever. And I think we almost apply a filter to them that is more in line with like your former work in the counterintelligence world, where we were putting this level of sophistication and intelligence on them. And they're not worthy of it at all. No, and then, you're so shocked when it's like, oh, they're just fucking idiots.
Oh, yeah. Every single one of them. It has not failed yet, Tony.
No.
These people are complete, you know, and some are even funnier than others in a tragic way. You know, if you remove the horrendous tragic things that happened to the lives that they've destroyed, but you look at these people as individuals. I mean, one of the craziest is Lori Daybell Vallow. Hands down, she is a complete nutter. That is, I mean, she killed her kids for their life insurance policies and claiming that they were possessed by dark demons.
And she believes it, you know, it's pretty simple. She's nuts. Her voices are telling her things in her head that are completely insane. That's Lori Vallow Daybell.
Yeah, and then you have the crazy nutters, you know, Wendy Adelson and Donna Adelson and that whole nut job case. You know, the murder for hires are extremely predictable because of the same themes every single time.
If you start simple and build up and to understand these people rather than start like at some sort of elevated level, it's so much easier to understand them.
Well, that's why we start with research.
Yep.
Because research gives us the fundamental background of understanding what's going on here. And then, because every individual's different, every case has got different nuances and leadership like, Sheriff Nanos and things like that. But at the core, what happened in the core? What was, again, going back to the original profile is like, what's the intent? The intent in every single criminal case is to either get revenge, get money, get something for me. It's always a self-centered action that all these individuals are doing, which is very wound collecting, victim mentality, and grievance collectors, you know, which is completely different than a normal, healthy human being. And so they fit into these this paradigm of just nutters that is much easier to understand that baseline start with. And then we just explore where the different little nuances are that made them who they were on that journey. So we can kind of predict the behavior, so we can find and follow the leads where they go, so we can get the evidence, so we can put them away and not have them inflict themselves on the rest of the world.
If we can only catch them before they do. Wouldn't that be great?
That would
be wonderful. All right, that's going to wrap up this episode of the program. Give us your thoughts on the Corey Richens trial in the comments section, either on our Substack or YouTube. The links are in the description. Love to hear from you there and get your feedback. All right. We'll continue the conversation there. Until next time, for Robin and Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.